right, I'm with Daniel. It's the day after United 2, Bournemouth 2. But we were just saying off air, Dan, how enjoyable it is that Liverpool are blowing this, and little Mikel Arteta had a meltdown today after his side was beaten by Aston Villa. Small things, hey?
They're not even small. Like, Liverpool winning the title and Klopp's last season with that team would not have been small at all. It would have been fucking dreadful. And maybe they still will, but I've been saying this all season, I could never accept the fact that it was even on the agenda, just because how can you win the league where there are two teams that are fucking miles better than you? It just didn't seem feasible. And the reckoning is beautiful because the reckoning has come all in one go like this. And it's been in the post for such a long time. But
yeah,
I was never that worried. And I guess it is nice watching little Mikel in his little trouser, little Arteta, getting upset. But I guess if we're saying, well, City's cheating, so we don't care about it, then this is not a terrible outcome. But just watching it, thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, man, 4 in a row, 6 in 7, and everything else still on the table.
Yeah.
It's not good, is it?
Well, it's not good, and perhaps we'll have moved on from FFP to PSR to a squad cost rule with a luxury tax by the time City ever actually officially caught for cheating, and they'll just buy their way out of trouble. Who knows? Let's hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, I find Arsenal as a concept, and Arsenal fans and their manager and most of their players, except for Bukayo Saka, because he seems sound, I find them all very annoying. But then again, City 4 in a row. What? How many? 6 in 7, did you say? That's no good. It's no good for anyone, is it? But I particularly enjoyed Liverpool. I think we precipitated the crack up, didn't we? Like last week, getting the draw with them, and then they got spanked by Atalanta in the Europa League and lost today. All quite sweet. I just don't want it going down to the final day of the season. Like, remember a couple of years ago, final day of the season, we're having to cheer City on to make sure Liverpool didn't win it. Don't want any of that crap. That's just soul destroying.
Well, they're talking of Bukayo Saka being a good bloke. There was an unnamed Arsenal player. All the Arsenal players go and get their COVID jabs at this pharmacy in Edgware. And so they're all there. And there's someone, like, there's some kind of Jew walking past. So he says, it's my son's bar mitzvah coming up. Will you sign this card to him? They will say yeah. And then he gets to an unnamed Arsenal player and he goes, I think he says that'll be 900 quid. Wouldn't be right.
Oh dear.
wouldn't be right to say which one it was. I'll leave that to your vivid imaginations. But yeah, cute cheeks.
Wow. Absolutely outrageous.
And I can't remember if 900 was, I can't remember if 900 was the number, and I was just looking on my phone, but it wasn't. It probably wasn't £900 in retrospect, but it wasn't a tenner either. Yeah, and it also wasn't an amount that would make a difference given the exchequer that is already commanded by this extremely wealthy individual. But I fucking, yeah. On the plus side, I did go to IKEA this morning, and IKEA has some of the greatest 1p sweets known to humanity. So we can all comfort ourselves with that.
You went to the pick and mix, did you?
It's not pick and mix. It comes in a packet. But what they do that's great is they have lots of different flavors of sour stuff, but tossed in with them, there's just your regular cola jellies. And
yeah,
it's the little things. Just make a little difference.
You got to take little moments of joy in life, haven't you? We have one life. It's not a proper life if you haven't had IKEA sweets. Did you get some dimes there?
I didn't. The IKEA pick and mix before COVID was also quite good. Was also quite good, and now they've had to go to a packet form, but the packets are still excellent. So yeah, big up IKEA's sweets, if nothing else. But as far as United do, yeah, kind of watched for about 5 minutes, and I thought, we've seen so fucking many of these games, these end of season games, and at least now they're not unentertaining, I suppose. Like, do you remember the year where we got the Europa final with Mourinho?
Yeah.
And the games that are leading up to that, when he's decided he's not going to try and get top four, he's just going to make sure that we suffer our way to the Europa. Some of the worst football known to mankind in those games. But
truly was, yeah.
I mean, also, did you happen to notice what Eka was wearing. He had these kind of beige throws on and a life preserver. And it's just, why?
I was just chatting with the old crew about Nagelsmann, because rumors today that he's going back to Bayern. And we were just sifting through some of his rigs. And truly, that man has worn the worst clothing ever. Just some really special ones. The one full red tracksuit with a puffer jacket on. I particularly like that one. It looks like he's in a Guy Ritchie film. And then there's the other one where he's got this, what looks like, you know, when someone gets murdered and they put the tent up and they have the forensics around. Looks exactly like that. Like he's doing CSI Bayern or whatever. And there's some crackers in there.
Because he's someone who I wonder if footballistically, to borrow Wenger's phrase, and has the chops to do the United job and also would go and not be scared. But on the other hand, I couldn't get beyond turning up to Old Trafford looking like he looked that night and getting splattered 5-0 by Ole. It's just, in my mind, it's very hard for me to rehabilitate him. That one he was wearing, it was a black blazer with constellation of white dots on them. It's just exactly, in fact, I still remember it. Like, which other visiting managers' outfits can I remember from their trips to Old Trafford? There might be none.
None.
But I remember his, and they got Wallen 5-0.
Yeah. The outfit he really likes, like boat shoes with what look like suit trousers, but are above the ankle. So he's showing his ankles. It looks like he's wearing suit trousers that are two sizes too small. And then he's got boat shoes on. He loves that outfit.
Is it the Major General's wife in the Mikado? There's definitely a Gilbert and Sullivan character who's really heinous. But the joke is like she has very attractive ankles and a very fetching left elbow and shit. And maybe that is Nagelsmann. Also, I mean, I know that we don't treat names the same way, but Julian, manager of United, I'm not sure about that one.
Well, yeah.
Can you change your name to Wesley maybe, or something with a bit more gravitas?
Does Wesley have gravitas?
I do like the name Wesley. I mean, there was no one in the famous five called Wesley, for example.
No, at least it's not a Rupert or something.
But as you
like
say,
that,
it looks like as you say, it looks like he's going back to Bayern, so it won't be him probably. But it does very much look like it will be someone, because this is fucking bullshit.
Well, let's talk about the draw against Bournemouth then, and United slipped down to seventh. We've been overtaken by Newcastle,
who, by all accounts, are having a dreadful season.
I mean, given that Liverpool won the Carling Cup, Carabao Cup, and are likely to make the Champions League, there should be an extra Conference League place.
Yes.
So seventh will probably qualify for the Conference League, so we won't even get out of that if we finish seventh. So
fucking in.
Get in. Yes. I mean, it was truly dreadful from United, but the same performance as we've seen over and over again.
For a decade.
I mean, there's that. But yeah, for a decade, but also it's just where their back four are under complete pressure all the time because there's just nothing in front of them. And it gets to the point where Frank fucking De Boer was eviscerating Ten Hag this weekend and going, this just can't happen if you're coached properly.
Right. And we know what Mourinho said about him.
Yeah.
I think there's also, for me anyway, I don't know what, there's something I find particularly offensive about struggling against these fucking South Coast joke clubs like Bournemouth and Brighton. These are seaside resorts where old people go. these are not football clubs. Like Bournemouth, right? Their nickname is the Cherries. Terrifying. Oh no, we are playing the Cherries. And their crest is just like this generic bloke with a ball on his head, like some kind of seal. And they've got that Muriel, like Hilda Ogden, in their stand. And yeah, they're just the height of Tory Bournemouth. And losing or doing badly and struggling against that is, I find personally, quite offensive. And although I think Bournemouth quite good side and their manager's good, I think it's funny that quite early on, like right in the beginning, the first thing United do, does anyone know? Think about they kick off. What do they do from the kickoff? Bruno turns around and he passes the ball to fucking Andre Onana. What? And in a sense, maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe. Okay, it's not a big deal. But why? You start halfway up the pitch and you go back to the other end of the pitch when you know that you're not good at playing out. Why?
Yeah.
And it was something I noticed a lot during the game. So many passes sideways and backwards. And it's come back to this a lot where I will find an unreconstructed proper football man who says something really simple about the game that has become much more complicated since they played. And usually it's Graham Souness saying the team that gets to the ball first wins. Like, to me, like one of the biggest truths about football, despite all the other stuff that also has an impact on the game. But also Roy Keane, possible forwards. How you can't create goals if you don't pass the ball forward. And for the first half, particularly, we did not do that.
And yeah.
I don't know. And that first thing really encapsulated it. You kick off and you send it to the keeper. Nah, man.
I think as the game wore on, they were passing the ball forwards, but it was basically long and they started getting very direct, basically because there isn't much midfield. I mean, Cobby didn't have an awesome game. He looked a bit tired. Casemiro had an all-time stinker. He was just
another one.
Absolutely dreadful. It just, I mean, he's gone from like, you're not sure about his wastefulness and physicality in the Premier League to he definitely can't cut it physically in this league because he just can't cover the space anymore.
Too busy cutting cake. It's funny because I've been kind of thinking back to last season. Do we think in retrospect that he perhaps wasn't covering the ground as he wasn't covering the ground loads quicker, but the team were playing with a bit more confidence. They didn't have the same injury that Martinez behind him. Did he cover some of these deficiencies with goals and just general good attacking play?
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. So
because maybe, but still, I mean, that was a fucking dreadful performance, Tim. It really was.
Truly.
Oh, my days.
Truly dreadful. And he didn't get hooked either, which was the thing. I mean, Ten Hag pulled Garnacho off at halftime and then chucked him under the bus after the game by saying it was all his fault with the defensive problems. I mean, he didn't...
On the right side,
he didn't quite say that, but he basically intimated it. So, I mean, Dallo had a dreadful game as well. So, I don't know.
That's funny with him, isn't it? Because that's two in three, but the one in the middle was against Liverpool, and he was excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. Alan Smith was on co-coms in England, and he said something about Maguire being there to give Kambuala advice throughout the 90. 10 minutes later, he's in a heap. And with friends like that.
Yeah.
What did you make of Willie's performance, Big Willie?
I mean, he obviously got kind of turned around for the goal, didn't he? And I don't know why he's not wearing the right studs, but he looked like he was too square. And so when he turned, he fell over. So that's not awesome. And of course, he was very close to giving away a penalty right at the end, which would have been classic United at the moment. And probably rightly given as a free kick outside the box, because although his right foot was on the line, his left was a little further forward, I think. So though, marginal, really marginal.
I thought he was a bit unlucky with that one.
I think it wasn't a foul, or because you could just say he couldn't get out of the way.
How's he getting out of the road? Yeah. It's that. Like when you see it at full speed, the problem I think we had in terms of judging it is that the camera angle was not great. I don't think we saw like the kind of the mincing of bodies. It's just when every time they watched it with the replay, I felt like how you, and I was watching it on computer, so I couldn't go back. How you meant to get out of the way of that?
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I'm not the slip I'm prepared to excuse because that's not something he's going to do regularly. You wouldn't have thought. I'm also prepared to excuse the foul penalty, whatever. The rest of it, I like his desire to go and win the ball. Like he's a proper front foot defender. Mm-hmm. And that's how he won the challenge that we got from which we got our first equalizer. But I felt like prior to then, there were quite a few times he went charging in and got the timing wrong when he wasn't going to be able to get the ball. But I think there's something to work with. But again, you can't expect defensive cohesion when your back four is that.
Sure.
Because individually they're not good enough, but also collectively they don't play together. And Wan-Bissaka, I feel like Wan-Bissaka at left back, every time we get the ball down the left, and I feel I don't mean to cover my eyes and my hands while I'm relating this sorry fucking tale, but it's honestly like, it's giving me illness. Because you just know that as soon as he gets involved, that's it. The attack is over.
Yeah. Every time. I mean, like, if you actually think about what Ten Hag's ideal 11 is, he's really only Shaw and Martinez away from it being his strongest 11. So in that sense...
And Shaw, yeah. Sorry, did you say
Shaw? Yeah, Shaw and Martinez, yes. Who would definitely go in. Varane, possibly, although he's basically... His job shared with Maguire this season anyway. So clearly that does make a difference in terms of the quality of players there and its ability to attack down the left and play out from the back with Martinez. So I granted that is all definitely true and good mitigation. How the team can lack such defensive... Well, the defensive shape's all wrong from the front, which everyone points out constantly. And if every twat on Twitter can go, hang on a minute, they're not coordinating their press, you'd think the coaches at United be able to work that one out too. Through to midfield, where they go roaming all of the time, they don't seem to know when to be in the right position, to exactly where to be defensively. So it just doesn't seem very cohesive, even though there's
players out. Are we saying that we think that Ten Hag can't communicate effectively?
He doesn't seem to be able to get his ideas across.
Because then that sort of fits in with what we've felt all along, that he sort of lacks the interpersonal skills to do the job well enough. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like if that's what's going on, that we watch the games and you're like, how can this not be what's going on?
Yeah.
Those lack of soft skills are a problem. And when you factor in also dog shit tactics that are unsuited to the Premier League, don't appear to have changed in a year, even though they've been not working for all that time, it feels like this is the end. And something else I'm thinking about is, because we've been saying the last couple of months that the attack that United now have, that if you're going to beat United, and I think this is true, every team we've played in the last 2 or 3 months, apart from City, you have to score 3 if you want to beat United. You don't have to score 2 in every game. We saw it again. But you watch the games and you think, he's got his front 6 now. Okay, he doesn't want Casemiro in it. He wants a different player that he'll have in the summer. And you mentioned Martinez with attacking down the left. I actually would extend that to say that it's not just about attacking down the left, because he can run forward. He can run with the ball as well as hit that diag. And the diags he was obviously going to go to the right, because he's mainly hitting them left-footed. So he's feeding the right, but he's also feeding left, and he's able to run forward with the ball. So it's the entirety of United's attacking play does sort of appear to be dependent on him almost. And we saw the difference when he played against Wolves. That first half hour, whatever it was against Wolves, probably the best United have played this season.
Yeah.
And so, however, his front three is his front three. He's got Bruno Fernandes, who is an elite level creator. And when you watch him play, it sort of still feels like the chances and the stuff comes because these are some good ass players. There's not that rhythmic sense of them building pressure, sticking a team on the rack and keeping them there.
But they're not even trying to play that way. I mean, it's get the ball forward quickly. And see if they can conjure up something.
They try and win it back. Yeah. they have it. And then try and counter press.
Which has worked all right. I mean, it's the thing is with the counter press is they all seem to go at the same time. And then there's this massive gap between that front four and the rest of the team, which causes this huge amount of pressure, which just leads to shots on goal. And you know what? Shots on goal, number of shots you take on goal, and the number of goals you scored, there's quite a good correlation between the two of them.
Incredible scenes.
I mean, that's my deep analysis there. But I was looking at the graph going, it goes up and to the right. Funnily enough, the scatter plot on that one.
Something I did enjoy about this game was it was nice to see Bruno playing like Bruno again. I mean, he'd fucking ready to murder Maguire by the end. And I realize I'm swearing a lot today. And I think some people have not liked it when we do that. So I apologize, friends. But I don't know. I'm not sure what other words one is meant to deploy.
Yeah.
To describe the nonsense that was perpetrated on that football pitch on Saturday and for the majority of the season. So, yeah.
Well, there was that moment where Bruno and Ten Hag were having a go at each other as well. And Bruno clearly did not agree with whatever instruction he was being given, which was interesting. So I haven't got the sense yet. I don't know whether you feel differently, that the players are like somehow giving less, don't care, don't want to play for this manager. Like, I haven't got the sense that there's a lack of unity yet and that the stories aren't really coming out. So it doesn't feel like it's... The problem is that they don't give a shit about Ten Hag yet. But clearly there's something, a gap in what he's saying, their training, like, and what's actually been coming out on the pitch. Because clearly you can't want this. I mean, if this is the plan, which is we will give up 25-ish low-quality shots per game to the opposition every single game and hope that we block and or they're saved, and we will do something up front of which there is no fucking pattern, as you point out, and hope great players score something. If that's it, then he deserves to get the boot. Like
the most, yeah, and I think with the attacking, the thing that makes me think that they're making it up as they go along and it is just the players, is they can't get Højlund involved.
No.
And they've not been, and it feels like he bought this player who we think might be good, but without a real sense of how he was going to get the most out of him. And it's different when you sign a centre forward to when you sign a right back or whatever, because you're signing this guy and he's the person that is going to be the focal point of your attack. And whether he's going to be the guy holding the ball up, whether he's going to be that person or the guy running in behind or whatever. And they, with no apparent idea as to how to use him, and that still looks the case. And I know he's coming back from injury. Maybe he's a big lad, takes some more, don't know. But they could not get him involved yesterday. And that's, I mean, maybe he has to know better how to get involved. But I think that for a centre forward, it is much more about the service than the runs. Like, he's willing. He's not lazy. He's not thick. He also suffers from that, the distance in the team, in that their first goal comes because the ball goes into, does it go into him and he touches it off and Garnacho loses
yeah.
it and they can't, there's no one there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no one there to do anything about it. And it's just that's the most telling notion that they don't know. And also, and this isn't just Ten Hag, this is Rashford as well. Every time Rashford goes into the box down the left-hand side, I know that almost definitely nothing is going to happen. And not because most attacks end in failure, just because he doesn't know what's going to happen. There was more of that yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
He might beat the first man and he'll go back and he just can't make up his mind. And
I mean,
again, that feels like something that should be coached out of him. Like, tell him what to do, get men around him, yeah. whatever it is.
It's a very similar pattern every time that Rashford gets it. He runs with it. Maybe he beats the first man. Maybe he beats the second man. But at some point he loses it and he's run down a blind alley. With Højlund, he has taken so few shots this season. Like, he's not getting on the ball and he's not shooting. In fact, I think I saw a stat that Erling Haaland had missed as many chances this season as shots, as Højlund has taken shots. And which is, of course, a lot about the team. But yeah, I mean, you're right. He's just not involved. And for a player who can do something when he is involved, that's a failure of how United are playing, for sure.
He can do special things. He can do stuff that other people can't do. And getting him the ball on the halfway line and having him run away from a defender, that requires circumstances. So it's not that we're not seeing the Rasmus goal like that loads of times. Even though he said it was a Rasmus goal, I've kind of felt when he said it that what you mean is actually that sort of one of those goals that most people can't score, but you can, rather than the kind of goal we're going to see you score a lot, because you don't see a lot of those
yeah.
goals. But some of the other goals he scored where he's just got explosive power from around the box, and we just can't get him into that position. And obviously after we score, we have another classic score after we concede. And what we don't have, but what I'd like to see, and maybe I meant to do this and I forgot, is I feel like just as we often concede after we've scored, early goals and late goals. Absolutely brilliant at them as well.
Definitely late goals. There's been a lot of those.
The penalty also. The delay from the referee where he blows his whistle and then he allows the drama to build and everyone to make sure that everyone's looking at him. It's just, it's not a big deal. And part of me, like the writer part of me, is like, yeah, cool. Like, I love drama. Like, drama's my job. Like, build drama. And you build drama. One of the ways you build drama is with pauses. And the other part of me is like, fucking better, man. This isn't about you.
Yeah.
But it just felt like he's like, I would know what I've seen here and I'm going to give this penalty and everyone's going to look at me and then go, great work. Other people wouldn't have done that. But you, whatever your fucking name is.
Yeah, no idea.
You have absolutely nailed this moment, you absolute hero of moxie and fiber and bottle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought, yeah, that was, you're a silly Billy.
The United's penalty, I guess it had to be given. It was very odd in that.
And then
he tucked his arm in but stuck his elbow out at the same time. It was all a bit.
That was never the penalty in the 43 years or 2 years I've been watching this thing of ours. I don't know. I could not believe what I was seeing when they gave that a penalty. Could you? Do you know a penalty?
I mean, like, old school part of me, no, but I like the way it's written now, that's not a natural silhouette. So.
No, but the ball just came onto him like
so quick.
The ball came onto him so quickly.
I know, but it doesn't really matter.
No, I get it. If you're the ball's coming here and you sort of go like that, we're not really trying to. That's a penalty. But if hands sort of like this, like it's not. Does it hit his hand? Does it hit
his knee? It's the elbow, it's yeah.
And you're sort of almost teapotting. Yeah. And the ball flips off someone else and it's here. There was nothing he could have done to get out of the way. And I feel like it feels different that if the part of your body is out, is sort of this bit than this bit. Like, because there you're really making yourself bigger and it's like you're trying to stop the ball with a hand. No one's trying to do this. Like, yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it looked like he was doing some kind of chicken dance and yeah.
There was people, if you played a lot of table tennis at youth clubs and shit, there would be people that would play table tennis like this. I don't know if you've ever seen it before. They'd have one bat like this and they'd have one hand like this. And it was, that's what it reminded me of. And their penalty that wasn't, the fans start going, check when it's Bournemouth, you only check when it's Bournemouth. And it's just, I don't think that I've ever seen something as oblivious as that in my life, in any aspect of anything. No one cares about Bournemouth. No one thinks, oh, it's Bournemouth, I better check. They think, who's this again? Oh, where?
No, Dan, it's a conspiracy against Bournemouth, didn't you know?
No, and also Wolves.
Yeah, and Wolves.
Wolves and Bournemouth. Yeah, yeah.
The Bournemouth are going to build a new stadium because they got this new American owner, newish American owner. And he's so ambitious, he's going to build an 18,000 capacity stadium. I'm like, what? Isn't it about that now? Apparently it's even smaller. That's how inconsequential they are as a team and a club. And just that, because I didn't comment, but I will now since I'm thinking about it. You're right about the Bournemouth crest. Did they have that redesigned at some point? I don't know the history of it because it looked.
Yeah. It wasn't always that. When Harry Redknapp was the manager, it wasn't.
It looks like an MLS badge, doesn't it? I mean, if you go look through the MLS badges, it looks exactly like that. Like they've all been churned out the same fucking AI program to come up with a logo. I mean, it's, yeah. Anyway, dreadful, pointless club, and we managed to make them look like peak Brazil as usual because that's what we do with everyone at the moment.
So as it happens, there was a story a couple of months ago saying that there. Okay, so this is the story in the badge. The badge is meant to be. It's a cartoon head. I mean, what? A cartoon head meant to be Dickie Dowsett, one of Bournemouth's all-time top scorers, heading a ball with red and black stripes in the background. And that's not. I mean, why? Where would the red and black stripes that are in the background on the background of the sky? I don't know. But there was recently a leak of a new one with AFC Bournemouth and some cherries on it, which looks a bit like a Pasha t-shirt. I guess at least, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about Bournemouth, really. I just...
I'm looking at the history. They had, in the 70s, they had this very similar head stripes thing. 72 to 74, and then 74 to 81, they had some variant of it. And then they went to cherries in the 80s. And then from 83 to 88, they had a
fruit machine, I guess.
Yeah.
80s fruit machine cherries. Good.
Yeah. Absolutely pointless. Pointless club. Pointless badge.
Do you still get kind of pub nauseas and arcade nauseas who on fruit machines? So someone will be on a fruit machine and then someone in any pub or any arcade or whatever, when you're bowling at it, you will always sidle up to them and start like looking down to see what's coming next and like taking control of their nudges.
Don't know. I can't say I go around pubs wishing to nudge for people, but yeah.
A fruit machine. Nauseous now extinct.
Maybe. It's an important question, listeners. Let us know. Do you hang around people?
Are you a fruit machine nauseous?
Yeah. Yeah. What can you say about United goals? Penn, fine. Bruno got himself in the right position to slam home that one with the left foot.
I thought he played really well, as I said, the way that I would like to see. And he hasn't had a particularly good season, so... But that was the kind of performance I'd like to see more of. But he must be getting towards the end of his tether. And I would imagine that if we were to not bring in players of the level that he would like to play with this summer, he'd be thinking about fucking off.
Well, he's 28, so it's getting towards the end. If he wants to be a player in a successful side, I mean, if it's going to take 3 years for the Ineos lads to turn this around, he's going to be in his 30s. He'll also be out of contract by then, and they'll have to decide whether they're going to keep him, if he wants to stay, and like whether he wants to waste the best years of his life at United like Big Dave did.
I mean, he might decide that he's pot committed now, that his family are here, he likes United, and therefore, because also, what are his options? He's not going to any of the teams that are good in this country. He's not going to Real Madrid either, and he's probably not going to Barcelona. So maybe he actually doesn't have any outs either. So maybe I'm just talking rubbish, but if I was him and not a United fan, basically, I would be thinking, yeah, I'd want to see some very serious action this summer because...
Yeah. And we got to see 12 minutes of Mason Mount. It's so curious, isn't it? He's, what, had 3 or 4 substitute appearances now. I mean, what do we, are we going to give him a game? Does he get a game against Coventry in the FA Cup semi-final next weekend? Like, or not?
Not a chance. So, like, this is the only important game we have left. This will be, I mean, I don't know what the fuck you do about Casemiro because you can't keep picking him, but you don't apparently have alternatives. So then what? I mean, how unpickable, how must Amrabat be? He's getting into like, was it Boyd Rankin or Stephen Finn that the England coach has said was unselectable,
right,
but for that one of those Ashes tours. But how dreadful must he be? But I mean, even more dreadful than we think. But hey, he won't play in that one. It's one of those transfers where and obviously we don't know exactly what went on, but for me, like, that's very damning for Ten Hag. Not because you sign a player and it doesn't work or whatever. It's just I don't grasp the direction in which you're taking the team with this purchase. You have, because it's your big midfield summer purchase, and what?
Yeah.
Improved your bench with it. I just...
Well, not even that. I mean, I guess the thing is they spent 10 million euros and it's a loan and they don't have to convert it. And why would you? Clearly, he's not good enough, but it would just been his wages plus the mega loan fee to have him for a year. I mean, there's as of yet, which of the Ten Hag signings could you go, yeah, all right, that was good? Because not all for Ten Hag's fault, but Martinez spent an awful lot of time injured. Not Ten Hag's fault, we don't think. Malacia has had 2 operations on his knee. Who knows whether he's ever going to come back? Andre dived over one again yesterday.
So there was a story that on The Athletic last week that seemed well sourced that said that, yeah, like, because obviously we've all heard rumours about Malacia, but yeah, apparently his career's not in jeopardy, said this story. So,
well, good. We'll have it back.
But yeah, I mean, Martinez was a massive hit, but obviously useless if you're injured. And it looks like Højlund could be a really good player. But it also looks like Højlund can do with having a different coach.
So. Well, yeah. And the rest, well, Eriksen doesn't play anymore, and I presume will leave. And Onana, I mean, you could...
But Eriksen was a goodbye.
Eriksen was a goodbye for a year.
Yeah, he was free and he was good last season, and that was what we needed him for. I didn't object to Eriksen. I thought that was... Like, he wouldn't have been the first choice. We got him because he was £0.
Yeah, big wages, though. And Anthony's been dreadful. So, I mean, like, whatever. We don't need to litigate it all, but it's clearly Ten Hag's judgment when it comes to players is not that sound. He's not going to have control over that anymore anyway. Like, I think, as we know now, Mertha was just subservient to Ten Hag's needs and didn't know what he was doing, clearly, because he'd never done the job before. And now we're going to have some people in place that do not know what they're doing and have done the job before. And sadly, they're all arriving late for this summer. Which
I think Wilcox.
Yeah, I mean.
But I think Wilcox is imminent, and it will. And as far as I understand what a director of football does, it's not going to be Ashworth who's going to be finding players. Ashworth's sort of the guy that knits it together and makes sure everyone knows what everyone else is doing. But I think it will be Wilcox who will be like technical director. He'll be the guy that is probably saying, this is how we should play, and these are the players, and that kind of thing. So I think in a lot of ways, the one we're relying on being good is Wilcox, because Ashworth's job is more organizational. And I guess we sort of know he can do that.
Yeah, Ashworth's going to be the lead football executive, right? Reporting.
He's a facilitator.
Yeah, sure.
He's not responsible. He's not going to have very much to do with what we see on the pitch, I don't think.
So, but the other thing to come back, round it off with Ten Hag, is that apparently he's been saying no to, you know, players that the recruitment department would be coming up. So, and like, it makes me question, like, how's he going to work in a organization where he's not going to get to say, I mean, maybe he gets a veto still, but it's not going to be, they're not going to be chasing his choices, right? So, and given the United's FFP situation, it's all right, I think, given the COVID season drops off and we're not going to have Champions League football, which does make an impact for June the 1st onwards for next year's accounts. But it's going to be all right. We're going to have money to spend, something anyway. It's like, do you even trust Ten Hag to be part of that process, even if it's some kind of collaborative process with Ashworth and Berada and Wilcox and O'Brien and the recruitment team?
Not particularly. I'd keep him if the alternative was Potter or Southgate, probably. Just Southgate, I think, is a penis. I mean, that's... Yeah. I don't like the way he's handled quite a lot of situations as England manager. I don't think he's good. I don't think he knows anything about managing at club level. Don't think he knows anything about managing. Like, it's just so many reasons why I wouldn't want United to have a manager called Gareth.
Is Gareth worse than Julian?
As a name or as a United manager's name?
As a United manager. Oh, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's gravitas.
Because, I mean, Gareth is just, I'd associate that with sort of like a rugby union name. Yep. And Julian's sort of like too posh to play rugby union. That's sort of how I'm evaluating them. But I don't know. Even too posh for rugby union. Which would you take if you had an option, Gareth or Julian?
Well, if it's the manager, Julian.
No, as a name. Gareth Barker or Julian Barker?
Oh, fuck me. Maybe it's a Julian. Not really sure. It's a bit wet, isn't it?
Jules versus Gaz. Jules is a better name.
Jules
than Gaz,
is all right, yeah.
Jules Winfield. Gaz from Supergrass. I mean, two excellent individuals. And Gaz is a red.
Yeah. Whether Eric will be a red next season, I have to say I doubt it.
There's almost no chance at this point, I would say.
Like, I didn't say that it was probably unlikely, even if United were doing quite well, just because you bring new management in, they're going to want their own man. But given how analytical they take things, like, I mean, you can't but fail the 57th game in a row that United have conceded 25 shots. You can't but fail to look at that and go, there's maybe something wrong here.
You're also, it's just, again, I said this last week,
Berardi's been working with Guardiola. He knows what this shit's meant to look like. And he knows it's not meant to look like this.
Yeah.
And my guess is that they went into this thinking, you don't spend 5 billion quid without bringing in your own man if it's not working. So they probably, their whole way, like they're trying to be very proper in the way that they're doing things. So they probably wanted to give Ten Hag a chance, but he'd have had to have done really well to keep the job. He's done really terribly. And we said this before Wolves. I remember when Wolves was the game where, okay, it's got everyone available now. It's got to get good. It's got to get good, like literally today. Not perfect, but, and it did. But then you're then thinking, right, if they, from here, there's enough time left in the season so that they can build momentum and qualify for the Champions League. They can maybe win the cup. And, but it wasn't even really about those two totems, because those also have a lot to do with what other teams do. That if Spurs and Villa had played really well, obviously unlikely because they're not championship teams, so why should they display championship form? But if they'd have done that, then you could say, well, okay, when he had all the injuries, he stayed there. And then the other thing you could say is, well, so you've got that injury situation, but then also the cup thing is, well, it's not totally in our hands, because at some point you've got to play City.
Yeah.
They're better than us. And if City, you can lose a cup final to City playing really well. It was more, can we build a succession of good performances that give momentum so that we start next season with basically a running start, because we've just battered a whole load of garbage, 3 and 4. So that we've got a team, it's settled, it's ready to go. We're going to add to it and we're going to be good. And nothing proximate to that has happened. I guess we produced aspects of goodness against Liverpool, and we do score goals now. But again, like, it doesn't feel contingent on the manager. Kind of wonder if he's given up. I bet the players think he's fucked.
Yeah, there was an interesting thing in the press conference where he sort of walked off, and people are there. Colin Miller pointed out, as I was making fun of Ten Hag on Twitter, that the press conference has actually been halted, and he sat there to hear the question and thought it was a dumb question and walked off anyway. But he is like giving vibes of someone who is leaving. He's got that kind of late stage feel to him. And part of it's because he's got no charisma at all, and he has no presence.
He can't hide it.
Yeah, yeah. So he can't charm his way through a difficult set of questions or the pressure that he's clearly feeling, because he's just, there's nothing there. So part of it's that.
Do you know what would be funny? Do you know what would be funny and is eminently plausible? Is that if he already knows where he's manager next season, but we don't know, but it's not known who's going to be doing his job.
Yeah.
Because if we're looking at other managers, and he must be thinking, these people are ruthless, and it would be unusual if they let him stay, then he'd be looking at his options.
Yeah, sure.
And he'll have some, probably, because everyone knows that United's a basket case.
Yes, what those
and
options
all
are.
All the people that know that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm.
But all the people that know United's a basket case, most of them don't have to watch United every week. So they have an idea of how shit it is, but they can blame it on the general malaise, whereas we can say, well, it's the general malaise's fault, but also your crap. Although I don't think he even necessarily is, but he's not good enough to rise above our ability to drag shit down.
Yeah, I guess the question now is whether United can move quick enough to make a decision on this, because it's getting to the point where, I mean, there's no point, and I don't believe this to be true, waiting till the cup final to make a decision. That's like whether United lose 2-0 to City or 3-0 to City or whatever, right? It doesn't really matter, does it, in terms of like assessing his performance. They are not going to pick up enough points between now and the end of the season to make the Champions League, even right, if it's into fifth place, right? So
I do think, right, though, so if you're firing Ten Hag, right, and I agree that it does sort of make sense to just do it so that then you can go and find your new guy in the open and speak to people rather than potentially letting Amorim and Nagelsmann, people you might have been interested in, you definitely should speak to if you're speaking to people, letting them go elsewhere, probably one to a direct rival. it does make sense to fire him, but I wouldn't fire him and say at the end of the season, because we might have a cup final against City and we need someone to find a way of winning that for us.
Well, I'd say that...
So I'm happy to fire him, but I'm getting someone.
Yeah, for sure. And they'll do that behind the scenes anyway. So, like, they've done that with Berada, Ashworth, Wilcox. I mean, Ashworth's obviously become very public. And, I mean, they're just going to have to pay the money. Or Newcastle just want to wait until after the summer is probably most likely. But they've been quite prepared to go to rivals and select the best person for the job. And I imagine that they are thinking about that anyway, whether Ten Hag stays.
So what's your shortlist?
Fuck knows, because if Nagelsmann's going back to Bayern and Amorim, who I couldn't tell you whether he's any good or not, is going to Liverpool, and we don't want Potter or whoever the other wet fuck is, Southgate.
Right, so then, is Unai Emery on the shortlist?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. Yeah, given he has produced a team that's more than some of it, they've got good players, Aston Villa, but are they 13 points better players than United's players?
No, they do have excellent players, but he's also improving them. I mean, he's not on mine, but is it? But why am I saying that? I don't know. Are we saying that he's someone? Well, I guess, is he sort of your deluxe Moyes?
Yeah, he's thrived in a... The interesting thing about this season is quite how attacking Villa are, and that doesn't really feel like how Emery's coached in the past. I mean, obviously...
Because he's practical.
He's practical.
He's practical and he's got really good attackers, loads of them, like, literally loads of them. Like, think about who they had on the pitch today. Buendia's out for the season and Jacob Ramsey's out for the season. And I don't think it's even just them.
Yeah.
So why I say, is he the deluxe Moyes? Is he someone who comes in at like a big to mid ranking club and does something great with them, but someone who doesn't have the personality somewhere bigger because
he failed at Arsenal and Paris Saint-Germain.
And it's so hard, so harsh to judge someone on succeeding Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, because number one, you're succeeding Arsene Wenger, and number two, he's left you a fucking shit heap of expensive players on massive wages who are shit.
Yeah.
So giving him 6 months there or whatever it was and being like, nah, you can't do that job, that sounds harsh. And yet the thing that I really want in whoever the next guy is a personality that takes everyone with them, that almost like dictates the nature of the club. And it doesn't need to be the same way it was with Fergie, where he controls everything. That's not going to happen anymore. But Klopp doesn't control everything in Liverpool. But his personality defines what they are. And I think United need that. And I don't think Emery can bring that.
He's not. I'm looking at the latest odds. Southgate, Potter, Tuchel. I mean, he'll be available, but no thanks. And doesn't seem to fit within this mantra of attacking football. Radcliffe talks like a fan. Like, so Lopetegui, Emery, Zidane, who's definitely not coming. I don't know what...
Jesus, man. These are the top names. Yeah. Like, I'm not even close to wanting any
Deserby, Nagelsmann, Frank and Mourinho.
Do you know what?
That might say something about the short-sightedness of people putting the bets, which...
And I hate to say this, but of all the names on that list, if Nagelsmann goes Bayern, I think I might be going Thomas Frank.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd go...
He's such a dick, though. He's just a complete penis. So.
I think I'd go McKenna before I'd go almost all the people on that list as well. And again, he doesn't have that personality either, so it's... But... It's just you just want something fresh and imaginative, not finding the same list of people that have failed elsewhere that you hope are going to succeed given your new circumstances at United when they don't ostensibly have the qualities. I don't know. I mean, I'd keep Thiago Motta, I'd have as well before those people. I mean, I'd have Gasperini before these people as well.
Yeah, Motta's interesting because he obviously done a great job. I mean, it's the interesting thing, of course, is there's so many big clubs looking for a manager. I mean, if Ancelotti stays at Real Madrid, and that's been a doubt, it looks like Xavi may stay at Barcelona, even though they announced he was going to go. So that will close things off. And obviously, Alonso is not leaving Leverkusen, but it's still United, Liverpool, Bayern definitely looking for a new manager.
Potentially Chelsea.
And maybe even Paris Saint-Germain. So, I mean, they're going to win the league, but they are not winning the Champions League, are they? Because it looks like they're going out. And they may fire Enrique as a result. And there'd already been conversations, like rumours about that. Anyway, he'd be another one. I mean, United talked to him last time, didn't they? So he'd be another one in the list if he left Paris Saint-Germain. Anyway,
it won't be him. And then I come back to it and it's just like, you just end up keeping Ten Hag and don't do that either. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, but I do want someone to show a bit of imagination rather than just to compile that list like the bookies of obvious names. I don't know. Like, if they think it's a 3-year project, then I don't know. Do you think you need someone? Is it okay to get someone who'll improve with the squad? I don't know.
It's a good point. All right, let's move on from this. Before we get on to, we should talk about the women's team who won their FA Cup semi-final. But what did you make of Alejandro Garnacho liking posts from Goldbridge about Goldbridge complaining about Garnacho being taken off? What the fuck has this club come to when we have our players?
We know who Goldbridge is. We know the name of Goldbridge.
I know.
And it's so odd, isn't it? Well. Did you see, talking of this, did you see Roberto Garnacho's tweet earlier in the week?
I don't think I did.
So when Liverpool lose to Atalanta, he texts something like, at Jamie Carragher, your team are fucking shit. Just out of nowhere. And it's just like, oh man, this is so heartwarming.
Good stuff. I don't want to make a big deal about Garnacho liking some posts. I do think that...
Your team is absolutely dog shit, he says. And that's just nice for him, the way that he's assimilating into British culture.
I think that United as a club should not take that particular outlet very seriously, and they have been. And they have a chief communications officer now, which is a new position for the club about 18 months or so. And I cannot believe this is being sanctioned at C-suite level, but it appears to be the case that the club are seriously taking this outlet as a professional media outlet, and the players are being put in front of them as sanctioned interviews, and information is being fed out the club to this particular outlet, and then players are liking their posts. Something very wrong in the state of Denmark when that is happening.
So. Do we think, what's going on there? Is there a relation? Is it Fremantle who own that channel?
I actually don't know. I mean, there is a relationship. I heard someone rang me up and told me that that's the case. Like, it's not by accident.
The United Stand is just the lamest name for anything. It's just, what is a United Stand? Like, if it's written by someone, like named by someone who's never been to a football match, definitely never watched United play. The United Stand.
No, I mean, if you're going to call it a stand, call it a fucking stand that exists at Old Trafford at least, yeah. Or did they worry that the large following, e-following, did not know what the K-stand was or the Sir Alex Ferguson stand?
Yeah, I don't know. Of course, I don't know. But it is a very weird do, is that. And I don't know. I just try and ignore it, really.
Yeah, me too, mostly. But this one caught my eye with the players liking it. All right, enough of that nonsense. The United women beat Chelsea, first time in 10 attempts, 9 defeats and 1 draw previously, and did very well to hold out for the whole of the second half. I mean, took a 2-0 lead, Rachel Williams and Garcia scoring in the first minute.
And the final is very
against
winnable.
Against Spurs, yeah. Very winnable.
They're favourites. Yeah. I mean, they're now under quite a lot of pressure. Yeah. Because they do have to win that match.
They do, in order to save a season of going backwards somewhat. Stories in the week that Skinner may be offered a new contract. I don't know that that'll be universally popular amongst United Women's Team fans. There are even some chanting at games recently.
He doesn't seem like someone who's likely to be good enough to compete with the best, I would say.
And like in the women's game, typically very short-term contracts on not loads of money, so it's probably likely a 2-year contract if they do offer that at the most. And so plenty of room to maneuver if next season doesn't improve. But I think last summer, like obviously they lost Becce and Russo, and then they brought in like eight players, like really late trolley dash around, almost none of whom have actually worked out this season. And so they really need to think again about what the approach is. But they Polly Brankoff left, so they haven't actually got ahead of the women's team. A guy whose name I completely forget came over from the foundation to take over the administration of the women's team. And so it feels like there's a lot of work to do there, in the same way they've been putting like time into getting executives for ostensibly the men's team. I guess it is the whole club. If the United women's team want to move forward, they're going to have to do the same there, the new owners.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you kind of hope that will be what happens, because just for no reason other than, again, like this is a legacy ego purchase, you're going to want headlines about underfunding the women's team?
Yeah.
I doubt it, given what the point of this is.
Yep.
And if you can get them to be good as well, then that's just a massive win. Like, just looking at them from purely selfish terms, if you're Jim Ratcliffe, that's definitely, yeah, what... Even if you don't care about women's football, let's say... Yeah. It'll still available to make you look good if you want it to.
For sure, and there's latent demand there. I mean, England games sell out. Arsenal have been selling out the Emirates. Barcelona get 90,000. Well, they were last season when they were playing games at Camp Nou.
The TV figures for England and Ireland last week also massive.
Yeah, the new TV deal is kicking in, so there's more money in the game. The way that the wage cap works in the women's game and doesn't impact overall FFP means that they can quite easily spend more money. So it's one of those like easy wins, I think, for the new management to go in, do things properly, spend a bit of money to invest. Because although United's overall budget is the second highest in the league, the wage budget is not. So they can spend more, and they can also do cross-licensing and stuff like that, which allows them to get around the cap in some way. So I imagine an easy win. But anyway, this could save United women's team season, much as the FA Cup could save the men's season as well.
Oh, man.
Talking of which, have you been following Coventry City closely this season?
I've seen them a couple of times, and they're not a bad team. They lost their best player, whose name is the little midfield player. I can't remember his name. I know. I mean, Ellis Sims is doing really well for them, and Victor Gyökeres.
Yeah, that's who I was trying to say. Yeah,
I don't think that's who I was thinking of. I was thinking, I can't remember his name. I think he's in the Premier League now. Ellis Sims, I think, will be a handful physically for our defenders. And there's every chance we make that difficult for ourselves.
Yeah.
But...
Well, we normally do. I mean, I can't imagine Coventry getting 20 shots against United, but hey.
They'll try and find it. They'll attack. Yeah. They'll come to attack us. And, I mean, if we lose, does he get fired the next day?
Well, it would be season over, wouldn't it? So that would be just bringing Ollie in to the end of the season. I think it's a reasonable point, actually, because if you're like, season's done, best we can do is Europa League.
And you're definitely getting fired if we lose that game.
I think, probably. I guess the other question is whether there's any clauses in his contract, as there have been with most other managers.
I think they're probably
about, like, the payoff if they don't make the Champions League.
Yeah. How long do we make? Yeah, probably another couple of weeks.
Probably another couple of weeks to make that official. Yeah. Yeah. Six.
But then at that point, are you not just like, if you go, we're going to fire, if you go in the press and go, we're going to fire him in 2 weeks, then surely he just leaves. Maybe not. I guess why would you leave? It was his money. But you'd think you'd come to some kind of arrangement.
Yeah. Wow. What a time to be alive, where we're discussing the possibility of a United manager getting fired for losing to Coventry City. It surely won't happen.
And then, right, but then, yeah, I'm lucky Fergie didn't, but that in 86, 87. But then, if
if we were to lose, who fight? There's no one actually available to fucking fire him because none of them
are in place.
They're in a job yet. Stan Fletcher got to do it.
Oh man!
I mean, maybe it'd be a nice one for Big Uncle Sir Jim to.
Given the type of personality he is and just how ruthless they've been with their management of Ineos, he wouldn't have any compunction about making that call. So.
No. In fact, some might suggest or wonder to the contrary.
Yeah. Oh, my days. I guess I'll probably have a chat with Wayne in midweek and we'll dive into Coventry City. I may even do some research. So I did notice they'd lost to Birmingham City this weekend, though. So they can't be that good.
Who are absolutely dog shit.
Absolutely dog shit. Yeah.
Like Liverpool. Not to be confused with Liverpool.
I mean, you could confuse them. It would be understandable.
Roberto Garnacho could easily confuse them.
Ah, man. Birmingham, 21st place. Poor old Wayne Rooney. What was he doing going there?
Well, surely it just shows, yeah, that it wasn't Wes's fault.
No, well, they've had loads of issues with ownership and money not being put into the club because the ownership was changing and, like, a potential buyer didn't come up with the cash and all sorts of weird stuff like that. So,
talking to him, he's put his back out on holiday.
Who was? Wayne Rooney?
Yeah, he was meant to go on Match of the Day last evening, but he couldn't because he said he'd sustained a back injury on holiday. And you do sort of wonder what he was doing. he was not forthcoming as to the details.
Yeah.
A friend of one of my best mates, there we go, I'll give us go to it this way. One of my best mates, his mother-in-law is best mates with a woman whose granddaughter's going out with Kai Rooney. And he was around, saw the Hanukkah candles, was very interested in the Hanukkah candles, and is apparently a really nice boy.
Oh, I thought that was going to be even more interesting, but Kai Rooney's a nice boy. Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, look, I like Wesser. I like him much more than I did the last 3 years of his time at United, where he was absolutely dreadful.
I'm really interested to hear him on that time almost. Like, did you know that you were, like, making it bad?
Yeah.
Or helping to make it worse. Sorry, let's say that. Because he must have known he'd gone. But I guess you're just so focused, you always think you cannot, like, it goes to Everton, and even then, he scores that brilliant hat trick with, like, the goal from the halfway line. So he still, I guess, has something. But maybe he's just looking around thinking, these players are all shit, so I may as well still be here. But I'd be interested to know how he praises that.
Yeah, I've never heard him talk about it. All right. I think we'll leave it there. And another mighty United performance. It's good stuff. Enjoyed it thoroughly.
Go Reds, please.